14. Yuuzhan Vong, World Ship, Coruscant Orbit. The laser beam, a meter thick, flashed from the depths of space to strike Savonlaw's World Ship. It hit with the force of a turbo laser battery, pouring damage onto the World Ship's surface, superheating the Yorick coral there, scarring deeply into it. Less than a second later, a void materialized beneath it, intercepting it, swallowing all the damage. The void remained there as the damage continued to rain down. Then, a minute later, the laser attack ceased, and the void disappeared. In the World Ship control chamber, Savonlaw took the news of the attack with puzzlement in his manner. "Extent of damage?" he asked. "Minimal," Mal Law said. "The damage is already regenerating. Within a day, there will be nothing but a battle scar."
"And you have not found the vehicle or emplacement that fired it?"
"No, War Master. Though it appears that it was fired from beyond the orbit of this system's outermost planet and took considerable time to reach our World Ship."
"Demonstrating merely that they have enough spotters on the planet below, and that those spotters have enough communications gear that they can keep track of this World Ship's position while it remains in orbit."
Savonlaw shrugged.
"Why would they demonstrate this knowledge in a way that gains them no advantage?"
"I do not know, War Master." Savonlaw considered, barely distracted by the twinging sensations brought on by the parasites burrowing their way through the flesh of his arm. A thought occurred to him, a discouraging one. "Trace the course of that laser attack."
"We have already done so, War Master."
"Trace it beyond the Coruscant system. What other planetary systems are directly along that line?"
Mal Law gestured to one of his analysts, and within moments the analyst brought them the answer.
"Furia," Mal Law said.
"Open the villop to my father, and bring Vicky Shesh to me."
Borlias Occupation, Day 39. Though the doors to the Special Ops docking bay were open, and the X-Wings of Rogue Squadron were maneuvering through them to land, Jaina, Kip, and Jag were directed to land in the kill zone, only a few dozen meters from the front entranceway, in an area where no other vehicles were situated. One officer stood there alone, and as they came in for a landing, Jaina recognized him. "Colonel Selchu." Her heart couldn't sink much. It was already somewhere around her ankles, but she felt it descend the final few centimeters to her toes. As the pilots emerged from their starfighters, Tycho looked between them.
"Anyone hurt?" he asked.
They all shook their heads. Kip, though undamaged, leaned heavily against the wing of his snub fighter, and Tycho gave him a second look.
"You go lie down," he said.
"Happy to."
Kip glanced at Jaina. "By your leave, Great One."
"Get some rest, Kip."
Tycho turned to Jaina. "General Antilles wants to see you now."
"I expect so."
"And me?" Jag asked.
"Later,"
Tycho said. Though he did want me to extend his congratulations on that shadow bomb tactic. Since kills can't be awarded to more than two people, he thinks that first interdictor should be awarded to you.
"I agree," Jaina said. "I'll sign off on that."
"Me too," Kip said. They walked into the biotics building. Kip managed not to stagger as he left them for his quarters. At Wedge's office, Tycho left Jaina and Jag to enter the inner office, then stuck his head out a moment later to say, "It'll be about 5 minutes."
"Understood," Jaina said.
When Tycho had withdrawn again into the inner office, leaving them with Wedge's protocol droid, Jag said,
"I need to talk to you, privately."
Jaina couldn't tell from his quiet, controlled manner what he intended to convey to her, but she had a good idea.
"There's a little conference room down the corridor."
"That'll do." She knew what he was going to say. His face would turn pale with his anger, highlighting the scar on his forehead, and he would cut her with his words.
"You abandoned your mission objectives for one pilot," he'd say. "You almost wiped out the rest of your squadron. You almost wrecked the plan. No one's life is worth that. Not mine, not yours. You're a complete failure as a leader, as an officer." He'd say that, and she wouldn't have any words with which to defend herself, because he'd be right. He'd stare at her with an expression made up of analytical calculation and hard experience. He'd tell her what he thought of her. Then he'd turn and walk away. He'd find himself a unit to command, a unit that could be counted on to perform up to his professional standards. A sharp pain sprang up in her gut, as though she'd inadvertently swallowed a vibroblade and her movements had finally switched it on. But she held herself straight. She had to be able to look him in the eye when he started in on the verbal beating she knew she deserved. They reached the conference room. Its door open, its interior cool and dark. Jag turned on the overhead lights, closed the door behind Jaina. She faced him, hoping that what she was feeling wasn't reflected in her expression. "I know what you're going to say," she told him. "I don't think you do." Oddly, his face was not the stern mask she'd expected. If anything, he looked uncertain, unlike the Jag Fell she was used to. "You're going to tell me that I screwed up. You're going to elaborate until you're certain I can't take it anymore. Then you're going to leave." Her throat, constricting, caused her to lose control of the last few words. They sounded high and hoarse to her. "No. We both know that your command decisions were far afield of common sense and effective strategy. We don't even have to discuss that. What I have to know..." He hesitated, and if anything, looked even less sure of himself than before. "What I have to know is this. Why did you do it?" "I don't know." "You do know. You have to know. Nobody else but you could know." He leaned in closer. It wasn't a posture of intimidation. He stared into her eyes as if he hoped to find an answer, any answer, written in tiny letters on her pupils. "Answer me."
I...
Her voice hoarsened until she was sure she could no longer use it. But finally, words emerged, words that seemed to be coming from a child. "Everyone is going away." Tears blurred her vision. "They keep going away, and I can't stop it. I didn't want you to go away." Then the tears did come, and Jag was transformed into a wavery block of black uniform with a wavery block of pale skin atop it. She could no longer read his expression, but knew it had to be one of puzzlement or distaste or outright contempt. Then he took her by the shoulders and pulled her to him, drawing her head against his chest, resting his own head atop hers. An embrace that startled her so much that she should have jumped away, but she didn't. She leaned against him, a half-collapse, her legs no longer willing or able to bear all her weight. And though she did not sob, her tears ran down her face and soaked into his uniform. "I won't go anywhere," he said.
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why won't you go anywhere?"
"Because I don't want to." He tilted his head down and hers up, and suddenly she was kissing him, holding him tight enough to cause a vacuum weld. Her confusion didn't disappear, but it was joined by a soaring sensation, as though she'd just taken off and left her X-wing behind. There was also an abrupt relief of pressure, unbearable pressure that she had never felt descending upon her, had never noticed until it was gone. Gavin Darklighter departed Wedge's office. Wedge and Tycho looked up as Jag entered and saluted. "I've known Jaina Solo since she was tiny," Wedge said. "You're not her." Jag kept his attention fixed on the wall over Wedge's head. "I came in her place, sir."
"She asked you to do that?"
"No, sir. I told her to go get some rest, that I'd speak to you and get things sorted out."
"Sorted out?"
Wedge exchanged a glance with Tycho, But his second-in-command had retreated behind the safety of his sabacc face.
Do I need sorting out, Phil?
I believe so, sir.
Through no fault of your own.
If I may answer a question with a question, how old were you before you first disagreed with the commanding officer and later found out you were right?
20, which is when I first had a commanding officer.
I'm about the same age, sir, and I have something to recommend before you talk to Jaina Solo.
Very well. At ease. Sit down. Let's hear what you have to say.
Jag did as he was told, and finally met his uncle's eyes.
Sir, I think that disciplining her now would be like hitting a bar of metal when it's superheated.
Meaning that you'll change its shape?
Yes, sir, and not for the better.
What about her reliability in combat? I need to take her off the line. She's not rational.
That would be disciplining her, sir. Probably with the results I predict, I recommend against it.
Despite the fact that she deliberately disobeyed orders and risked a high-priority mission to pursue a personal agenda.
Yes, sir.
Jag cleared his throat. Sir, I'd fly again with her tomorrow, and not out of gratitude. I think that what happened today was an anomaly. I don't think it will happen again.
Care to tell me why?
No, sir.
Wedge let a silence fall between them, let it stretch into long seconds.
You know, I would not, from a command point of view, be able to accommodate you on this, despite the fact that I do have appreciation for your views and experience. It's the sort of thing that undermines discipline. But we already have orders in place that demonstrate that Jaina receives special treatment. This is a more extreme variety of special treatment than I'd prefer to accord her, but there you are.
Yes, sir.
All right, then. I'll do as you recommend, and get my answers later.
Wedge leaned forward, his posture becoming more casual.
Let me take my rank insignia off for a second, Jag, and say how glad I am that you made it today.
Jag managed a smile.
Thank you, sir. Wedge.
Still difficult to address me informally, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Good. That gives me one more way to make a know-it-all nephew uncomfortable.
Wedge heaved a sigh.
Back to work for me, so I'll let you get back to your duties as well.
Sir. All business again. Jag stood, saluted, and left. When the door closed behind him, Tycho said,
That was interesting.
He deliberately countermanded one of my orders, Wedge said.
He was furtive.
Wedge nodded. Sneaky, even.
We'll make a rebellion-style pilot of him yet.
The Maw. Han navigated through the danger zone of the Maw with the grace, intuition, and delicate skill he could demonstrate whenever the need arose, but which he preferred to demonstrate only when no one was watching. As careful, meticulous flying of this sort ran counter to his image as a cocky and careless flyboy. Behind the Millennium Falcon, in a single file, followed two X-wings and a freighter, each meticulously duplicating his course changes. The Maw, from far away, was visible only as a big splotch of color, with dark singularities sucking in colorful gases. It was a convergence of black holes, their random placement almost completely enclosing within it an area of space. The extreme gravitational and light distortion caused by the overlapping fields of effect made it impossible for light within that space to escape, and made it fatal for any ship to try to enter or depart along a straight path. The routes to the interior space were complicated and devious, skirting areas made impossibly dangerous by the black hole's gravitational exertion. Only a very good pilot could navigate one of the known approaches. Only an extraordinary pilot could find a new one. Today, Han was playing it safe, traveling along one of the known approaches.
Knowledge of those routes was confined to a very few people. Leia knew Han could probably feel his way through a new approach, but now, with a ship full of children and teens aboard, with Yuuzhan Vong conducting activity at the nearby Kessel system, was not the time to explore. Eventually, Han made the final course correction and vectored toward Shelter, the space station growing at the center of the shelter space of them all. He breathed out several minutes' worth of tension and said, "There it is, uglier than ever." Shelter was an ad hoc collection of parts assembled by Lando Calrissian and a collection of advisors and patrons he trusted. Cobbled together into its structure were remains of the original Maw installation, a collection of hollow planetoids that had housed the workers and technicians who had fabricated Imperial superweapons, plus components of old space stations, modules stripped from cargo vessels, and extrusions whose origins Leia couldn't identify. In minutes, they were docked at their designated berthing area, a dome-like attachment whose base was about four times the diameter of the Millennium Falcon, and whose surfaces, a matte silver decorated with patches of rust, hinted at similar antiquity, which had not been in place the last time they'd visited several weeks before. Waiting for them as they descended the ramp was a tall woman, whose elegance and expensive dark clothes spoke of aristocracy, and distant times and places where aristocrats might enjoy the benefits of their station. Leia hurried ahead of the descending line of Jedi kids and embraced her. "Tendra, I didn't know you were here." Lando's wife gave her a return smile. "You almost missed me. I brought some materiel, and I've spent the last few days making sure it was up and running." "What materiel?" Han asked. Tendra waved her hand, her gesture taking in the entire docking bay, and by extension, the rest of the dome. "This. It's a deep space habitat module used by world shapers. It has its own gravity generator, even a crude old hyperdrive. It's been in storage on a corporate sector scrap heap for generations. I was able to pick it up for, well, less than it's worth." "And now it's the core of the Jedi portion of Shelter?" Leia asked. "Yes. I've made sure some of the areas originally intended for world-shaping materials have been restructured for training halls. It's pretty short on supplies." "We brought supplies," Han said, "in the other freighter as well as the Falcon. Food, fabrication machinery, energy cells and fuel, recordings." His gaze fell on the Jedi children spreading out through the docking bay, looking at the cargo loaders and Tendra's ship, the gentleman caller, and brats. "Hey, Valen Horn, Koran's son," stopped a couple of meters away and gave him a scowl. "I'm not a brat." "No, your dad's the brat in the Horn family." Valen smirked. "I'm going to tell him you said that." "You do that. Scoot, kid. Go beat up a rancor or something." Han returned his attention to Tendra. "If you're about to leave, you can wait just long enough for us to give the Falcon a checkover, and then we'll escort you out."
"You're not staying?"
"Too much to do at Borleos. Keeping your husband out of trouble, watching our daughter get in trouble." He exchanged a long-suffering look with Leia. "So we're going right back."
"I'll be ready in half an hour."
Tendra gave him another smile and headed back to her ship, her heels ringing on the metal floor of the docking bay. Leia sighed after her. "What I would have given to be that tall." "I've got 1,000 credits that say she's always wished she was petite, and another 1,000 that if you two got together to talk about how much you envied each other's height, the conversation would devolve into what pains your husbands are."
"No bet. Our husbands are pains."
"Well, they were Imperial credits anyway. Ready to help me go over the Falcon?"
"No, first I need to say goodbye to—"
Leia looked around the docking bay, identifying each of the people moving about.
"Where is Tark, anyway?"
"I've got 1,000 credits that say he's hiding on board the Falcon."
"Stop that!"
Han gave her a smile he knew to be insufferable, and thumbed his comlink. "Goldenrod, where is Tark now?" C-3PO's voice, sounding distinctly aggrieved, came back a moment later. He's in the upper quadlaser cupola, huddling in the seat so he can't be seen. And, sir, I do have a name.
Moments later, they stood at the bottom of the access into the turbo laser shaft.
Tark, Leah said, you want to come down?
No, the boy said. He didn't even lean over so his face could be seen.
It's time, Tark.
Leah made her voice gentle. If you get in line early, you may get better quarters.
And then I'll be stuck with them, the Jedi.
There's nothing wrong with Jedi. I'm a Jedi.
Yeah, but you're different. You're not creepy.
I want to go back to Borlias with you.
Han said, it's safer here, Tark.
The boy finally did look over the arm of his chair. He stared down at Han with an expression that combined pity with condescension, a forceful, you have no idea what you're talking about, look.
No, it's not, he said. The Scarheads are looking for Jedi. If they come here and find the Jedi, they'll get me, too.
Don't say Scarheads, Leia said. It's not nice.
Besides, Tark added, pulling back out of sight, if they don't come and people come for these Jedi kids, no one will come for me.
Of course we will, Han said.
No, you won't. The only reason I'm still alive is because I look like Anakin Solo. And it hurts your feelings every time you see me, I can tell.
Han looked at Leia. She paled and started to fold over. Han moved to put his arms around her, and slowly she straightened.
Han whispered, did you teach him to argue?
Nobody had to teach him to argue, she whispered back. All kids argue like senior politicians, except that not all senior politicians can cry on cue.
So what do we do?
She shrugged.
Maybe we shouldn't leave him here, in the place where all the other children have powers he can't compete with,
except for Wedge's kids, who will probably just subvert the administrators here to get whatever they want.
What do we do instead? Take him back to Borlias? Put him in front of the Vong? Ship him off to a refugee camp run by strangers?
At least we know Cam and Tion.
I just don't know, Han.
But you know everything.
Only by comparison with my husband.
Ouch! Han stopped whispering.
Hey, kid.
What?
Tark looked back over the arm at him.
Never get married.
What does that mean?
It means strap yourself in. You're going back to Borlias for now.
The boy's eyes widened.
Really?
Just for the time being, kid.
Han let real anger creep into his tone. And don't pull that because I look like Anakin, Skifter. Not ever again. Do you understand?
Tark's expression froze.
Yes, sir.
Remember this face, kid. It's telling you that I mean what I say.
Han drew Leia along with him toward the cockpit.
I'll figure out how to convince him next time.
I've got 1,000 credits that say you don't.